the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. All right, everybody, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Podcast. It's Colin Cowherd, Chad Millman in a few minutes. We're going to talk about the college football playoff, the NBA stuff, whatevs. So it's time for fake questions, real answers. I have a lot of questions I want to answer. I just don't want to sit around waiting for you to ask them. So I write them down, and I ask them to myself. It's called fake questions, real answers. Here we go. Dear Colin, what's the right number of teams in the college football playoff? Listen, the more teams you have, the more blowouts. Okay? So if you're going to have a 12-teamer, you got to give the top four a bye. So the worst matchup is a 5 facing a 12 seed. It's not going to be perfect. All the college football media does is bitch about anything in college football that they don't agree with. It's going to be great. It's going to make a fortune. It's going to be fun. It's going to get huge ratings. But it's not going to be perfect. It's not. You're asking college football fans to week after week after week travel in mass, 40,000 people. It's not going to be ideal. It's not going to be perfect. But is it good for college football? Yes. Is it good for the exposure of a lot of programs? Probably. It won't change the power dynamic. Ohio State's still going to kick Michigan State's ass 9 out of 10 years. But the bottom line is, it's good for the growth of the sport. It's good for television. It's good for my business. It's more big games. My biggest knock on college football, there's so many bad games. You rarely get, you know, a Southern team facing a Pac-12 team or a Big Ten team facing a Big 12 team. You're going to give me more of that. So I'm for it. The college football media is looking for the perfect playoff. It doesn't exist. I've been watching this sport 40 years. We used to have sports writers vote on the national champions. Okay? It doesn't exist. Perfection in college sports, it's not an even playing field. In pro sports, the better you are, the worst draft pick. They try to keep it even. In college sports, the better you are, the better players you get. It's not built to be even. Enjoy it. Quit griping about it. Dear Colin, Michael Strahan called the Giants Super Bowl 42 upset of the Patriots the greatest upset in football history. Do you agree? You know, it's funny about that. It will go down as a big upset. But I'm gonna give you a hint on why it wasn't. A great defensive line, go ask Patrick Mahomes last year, almost always wins the Super Bowl. So the Patriots and the Giants played in week 17. The Patriots won 38-35. Eli Manning threw for 4 touchdowns, had a pick, and a quarterback rating of 118. Brady in that game had 2 TDs, no picks, and a quarterback rating of 116. The quarterbacks were evenly matched. The Patriots were held to 44 rushing yards on 26 carries in that Week 17 game. That was their second fewest that year. In the Super Bowl, the Patriots were held to 45 rushing yards. Folks, the defensive line for the Giants, you got a preview of it in Week 17. They couldn't run the football on them. And in both games, Eli Manning, with his protection, matched Tom Brady. So the truth of it, the overwhelming presence of the Giants' defensive line in both games gave you the same performance. This wasn't a mismatch of talent. It was a matchup advantage for the Giants' defensive front. The Patriots were absolutely limited offensively in both games on what they could do. Brady had little time in both. They couldn't run in either. So it'll go down as an upset. But if you really look, years ago, Rolly Massimino, when they beat Georgetown. Remember that? Everybody said, Hoyas lose to Villanova, biggest upset ever. I hosted a show with Rolly Massimino. He goes, we played them 3 times. He goes, we had Ed Pinckney, they had Ewing. We matched up with them great. He goes, we played St. John's that year twice in the Big East and got destroyed. He goes, as a coaching staff, we thought we could beat Georgetown 3 straight times. We played them tight. He goes, we played St. John's twice. We were terrified we'd have to face St. John's in a Final Four or an Elite Eight. So what coaches think, Tom Coughlin knew. We match up very well with the Patriots. Colin, do you get sick of talking about Tim Tebow? I mean, seriously, isn't it enough already? No, I don't get sick of talking about Tebow. I get sick of watching Tebow. He's terrible. He's the worst quarterback I've ever seen, and he's a 215 hitter in baseball. I'm not sick of talking about him. I'm sick of watching him. I don't want him in the NFL to be the fourth best tight end on one of the worst teams. Can we stop the charade that he's a great athlete? He ran a 4.8 40. Folks, I ran a 4.79 in high school. Tebow's iconic. He's not a very good athlete. I mean, he's a good athlete compared to sportscasters. I don't get tired of criticizing him. I get tired of people forcing me to watch him play minor league baseball and he can't hit, and NFL football because he can't throw. Colin, if the NFL Rules Committee let you change one rule today, and only one rule, what would it be? Well, by rule, a fumble that goes out of bounds through a defensive team's end zone is a touchback. And the defensive team gets the ball. Isn't that a little punitive? I'm a running back. You get a good helmet on the ball, it squirts out. I would understand moving the ball back to the 20. But why do I give up the ball if you didn't recover it? Now, they started that rule years ago because of the fumble Ruski, the Raiders-Chargers game where Kenny Stabler kind of forward pass, they fumbled it, pushed it into the end zone, and they wanted to avoid teams purposely fumbling. I get that. But I shouldn't lose possession. If you park illegally, you get a parking ticket. You don't go to federal prison. Doesn't that seem a tad punitive? You lose possession of the ball? Everybody understand there's two fumbles, three fumbles every game? It happens. Colin, who's your favorite non-sports personality on TV, radio, or podcast, etc.? That's an easy one, Bill Maher. He takes on big topics. As a liberal, he's willing to go on conservative shows. He's willing to fight for what he cares about. My biggest knock on Democrats is they don't want to wrestle. Rachel Maddow just brings on people who agree with her on every topic. She never has a dissenting voice. Bill Maher brings on dissenting voices all the time. Nobody grows if you just bring on people who fulfill your echo chamber. Conservatives historically, Fox News will put on liberals. Now, they may shout them down and yell at them, but they'll put them on. MSNBC, it's just a chorus. It's a factory line of agreement. And one of the few people willing to get in an ugly argument on TV or podcasts is Bill Maher, and I completely respect that. Let's bring on Chad Millman, Chief Content Officer of the Action Network. So, college football reporters, you know, there's a reason, Millman, that people get tired of the media, because they're cynical. And all I read for the last 2 days is college football writers vetching about the playoff. And I'm like, it's not perfect, but it's going to be great. It's what everybody wants. It's more betting opportunities. It's more big games. College football has a big game problem. We never get enough big games because the Southern teams won't travel on the road. Big 12 team and Pac-12 teams don't want to go to the South. And all I do is read all these guys complaining. I look at the 12-team playoff and I'm like, college football's always been imperfect. You know, pro sports tries to keep it balanced by if you're good, you get bad draft picks, right? Like college sports is the opposite. The more dynamic you are, the better recruits you get. It's really totally unfair. The budgets are unfair. The geography is unfair. There's more good high school football players in the South. I love the idea. Do you believe it will surpass March Madness as the second biggest betting event in sports after the Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I like the premise of what you're saying. I love that you used Yiddish to describe how reporters were responding. They were kvetching. Yeah. It's great, great use of the word. I think that all of a sudden, January, which was already a big betting event as a month, because you've got NFL playoffs, you've got a little college basketball, you've got some NBA, and you've got the college football playoff, at least the title game, if not always the play-in games. Now you're going to have multiple playoff games for the NFL, playoff games and play-in game for college football. January itself starts to shape up as a massive, massive betting opportunity. I was out with some of those media folks in the city last night. The first thing anyone mentioned to me was college football playoff January, NFL playoffs January, the betting opportunities have exploded for that month.
Do you, when it comes to college football, and we can talk gambling or ratings, it's about a quarter as popular in television as the NFL. It'll get a 5 rating for an NFL game that would get us an 18 or a 19. It's about one quarter as popular. I would imagine from a gambling perspective, it's not even close to the NFL, or is it?
It's closer than you think because the volume of games. And because you just made a really good point, teams in the South won't travel. It's hard to find sort of balance in the way that college football manages parity. But the people who do bet, it is very regionalized and it is very, very passionate. We at Action Network and a lot of the sportsbook operators, you know, our partners from Volume at FanDuel, they can't wait for Louisiana to go online as a betting state this fall. Betting in the South is massive. And so you're getting that opportunity. You're getting betting in the West, in LA, people who love Arizona, right? Arizona football, Arizona State football, they will be legal in Arizona this fall. So it is very regionalized, and the markets in those regions can be incredibly, incredibly active.
Yeah. So I'm excited for it. I do laugh at the idea. I got a lot of this yesterday because I said the SEC is going to continue dominating. They have the most great high school football players in their geographic footprint. And people said, no, now the exposure will be so good for everybody. To that, I said, when you have the Shark Tank, exposure is only good if your product's good. If you bring out a crappy product and they poke holes in it, you look like a schmuck. So American Idol was great, unless you sang like William Hung, and then you were a joke. Like, exposure only matters when you're ready for the stage. So if Alabama rolls you 48-3, that doesn't do you any good in recruiting. When I went to ESPN, my first year, Chad, I'll never forget this. They did a promo about college football. And they said, the Florida Gators from Tallahassee take on the Seminoles from Gainesville. Why? Because nobody in the building knew college football. They only televised about 75 games a year. By the time I left ESPN, they televised 500. What does that mean? It means everybody's had exposure for 10 years, and it's still the big dogs dominating. It's not like they're getting less exposure. The truth is, if you put two beautiful people both get exposure, the more beautiful still curries the most favor. So Ohio State and Wisconsin, they both get exposure. All the great players still want to go to Ohio State. Kids aren't stupid. They see who goes in the first round of the NFL draft. I don't think it changes any dynamic, any power dynamic from the haves and have-nots. Do you?
Not a chance. It is an SEC and now a little bit ACC dominated sport. That's not going to change. That is endemic to the region. That is endemic to the quality of the players in those states. It is how they emphasize, and it's what's important. And a lot of it, I also think, is about weather, right? You know, it's becoming easier to play football year round in states where it is warmer. They change the offenses. There are more athletes gravitating to those sports in those regions than there are in the Northeast, which has never been a college football power, than there are in the Midwest, where it's still only Ohio State, maybe Penn State every once in a while, but they've got to be recruiting. You see Indiana even this year jumped into the conversation around college football. It is a terrible football school. I went there. I love it to death. The only reason it's getting better is because they're recruiting the sort of second and third tier players from Florida who aren't getting to the bigger schools.
That's right.
So it's like, and if all you're going to be doing to get better is recruiting the second and third tier players from the Florida schools, the Georgia schools, then you're never going to be as good as the first tier players who are going. Because look at this. Think about this, Colin. For years, there would be these studies about the number of draft picks who were five-star recruits, right? And for years it was, well, this guy wasn't a five-star. This guy wasn't a five-star. Because Alabama is so dominant, because LSU is so dominant, the trend is changing. And all of a sudden, the five-star recruits are also the number one draft picks because they are getting so much better in college. And it's very concentrated. It's a fascinating way to look at it. But I don't see the expansion getting better for Arizona or Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Wisconsin's on TV 7 times a year. Now it'll be 8. It doesn't matter. Kids don't want to play in freezing weather in October, November, December.
It's still going to be 10 below in the middle of October.
Yeah, listen, they're part of the expansion of the South, and you can go back to the 50s, 60s, whenever they invented air conditioning, is that factory workers, until air conditioning, Arizona wasn't very big. You know, air conditioning is why people could go live in the South or in Arizona, right? Well, yeah. It's the same premise. Like, people would rather live in warm weather, play in warm weather, vacation in warm weather. So if you look, when I was growing up as a kid, the college football powers were cold weather Penn State, cold weather Michigan, cold weather Notre Dame, cold weather Washington, cold weather Nebraska, cold weather Michigan. Those were the powers. And then there was like Alabama, Oklahoma. What happened? Then everybody gets their games on TV. And the kids in warm weather schools go, we don't have to go to cold weather. The only cold weather college football power that remains top five is Ohio State. That's it. Why? Because when given the choice, Americans choose warm weather. Even cold weather people, when they get old and aren't tied to a job in cold weather, move to warm weather.
One of the people that works with me at the Action Network, his name is Chris Raybon. He's one of our lead NFL analysts. He was born and raised in New York City. He went to Syracuse. After Syracuse, he went back to New York City. His girlfriend got a job in LA. He just moved to LA last week. I said, how's it going so far? He goes, it's amazing. I go, you will never move back to the East Coast again. And he is as hardcore New York as it gets. He will never, ever move back to the East Coast again. You were never a sort of dyed-in-the-wool East Coaster. I mean, you were coming from the state of Washington. You sort of gradually moved your way east as your career got bigger, and then we're living in Bristol. You're in LA. The chances of you, no matter what you do with the rest of your life, the chances of you leaving LA are zero. Nobody leaves the West Coast when they go to the West Coast. It's
impossible. I always said this. If you can make money out West, there's no reason to leave. If you make money out East, half the people would still choose the West. Because the quality of life, the way, when I hear about all these tax gypsies, if you want to go live in Seattle and be under gray skies 10 months a year, I grew up there, go for it. If you want to live in New Hampshire or Wyoming, go for it. I got nothing against Texas, but Dallas bores me to tears and it's a furnace in the summer. The reality with college football fans, to circle back, is whereas in the NFL, the team chooses you, in college football, the player chooses the team. And there, if every college football program in America had their best coach ever, Joe Paterno still wouldn't beat Nick Saban right now. Florida with Urban Meyer would still beat Michigan and Bo Schembechler. The truth is, I love the Washington Huskies, but when USC had Pete Carroll, it would beat the Washington Huskies. When warm weather powers get the right coach, they win.
To my point earlier, I can't believe you didn't say Nick Saban would still beat Lee Corso at Indiana, because that's really the matchup I was thinking about. But you're 100% right. And to your earlier point, when you started talking about people think that more teams in the playoff will increase exposure for college football teams and then give the opportunity to places like Wisconsin, or let's say it's Washington on a more consistent basis, or Oregon outside of the Chip Kelly era. Give them more of an opportunity because more students will get to see them and go play there. It's recruiting is not even about exposure. It's about the coaches. You know, Dabo Sweeney goes into a house, he wins. Nick Saban goes into a house, he line dances, he wins. That's it. And like, it is harder and harder to compete with the legacy of those guys, the legacy of those programs, especially when you are in good weather. That is it is something you cannot win against.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great. FanDuel's offering users the chance to play free. No deposit required. Plus, for those folks who want to deposit, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. It's sweet. Why do you play on FanDuel? Well, the FanDuel Fantasy is an easy, easy-to-use app. You pick a new team every game. You compete for top cash payouts. Compete against your buddies in head-to-head matchups. For new users, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Just go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd. That's it. FanDuel.com/Cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/Cowherd. They know we sent you there. FanDuel, just more ways to win. So you're a sports fan, right? That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app, free, recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can, one, see the latest picks and articles from the Action Network gambling experts, two, compare odds from different sports books, and three, track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter. Yeah, I know somebody's listening to this podcast from the Northwest, and they're like, Colin, you traitor. It's like, I love going back to the Northwest in the summer. It matters. It matters for everybody. You know, years ago.
One other thing, though, Colin, to think about, that what is valued if you want to be a professional football player, which anybody being recruited for college football wants to be, from an offensive perspective, is your ability to pass the ball, your ability to catch the ball, your ability to run in space. That is predominant in the Southeast and it's predominant in the West. You are not going to get that in the Northeast. You are not going to get that in the Midwest. Justin Fields is an anomaly in that case. He is the exception to the rule there. So that also has a massive, massive factor on it. And it's how high school offenses are being played. They're all being opened up. There's a lot more 7-on-7. There's a lot more sort of spread offenses being played in the regions where they're funnels for those schools, which then become better feeder schools for the NFL.
Yeah. NBA. Bucks are going to lose. I'll still take the Clippers. I'm probably wrong. Atlanta, Philly, I don't care a ton. My big bet was Suns over the Nuggets. And I said yesterday, Friday, on The Herd, on FS1 and iHeartRadio, I said, if I had to reseed this thing, I would take Suns against Brooklyn in the final. That's what it feels like to me. I thought the Suns was the best bet a week ago when this stuff all shook out. Kind of your takeaway from a betting perspective to a casual bettor that looks at what's available. Is there any gem left for you that you really like?
No, because now we're two games in. You and I had a conversation last week. You said you like the Bucks. I said, if you like the Bucks, wait until after game one.
That's right.
The odds will be better. And because you really want to see what's going to happen in that first game. The Bucks have been dreadful. And I don't know what it is that, to me, if they don't win this series, you got to get rid of Coach Bud and completely reimagine what that team is, because they went for broke. They got Drew Holiday. They got Chris Middleton in space. They've improved their shooting. And yet they only scored 86 points in a win, which is how many they scored when they were blown out by 30 two nights earlier. So this team is definitely in trouble. The Clippers are so interesting to me. I had the Clippers and the Bucks in the finals before the playoffs. And I really believe that the Clippers with Tyronn Lue and the way they had been playing late in the year before they were tanking to tank for playoff seeding, I just thought this is really a special team and they would bring it together. It's just so passionless. And it's like, I love Kawhi as a player and I think it's amazing to watch, but when he's playing, I'm just so disappointed in how it doesn't feel like they play with passion and urgency. And Utah to me has been a revelation. And we talked about this too. Utah at the top of the seeds, they were the best team in the NBA, not just the Western Conference, right. The best team in the NBA. They're playing like it. everybody is trying to find reasons not to bet them. They are playing like it. I think they will beat the Suns in the Western Conference Finals now. They're just better. I think the Clippers are a better team than the Nuggets, and the Jazz are outplaying a much better team than the Suns are.
So can I give you one of my theories on Kawhi Leonard?
Yes.
So years ago, over a decade ago, a professor did a study on luck. So he sought 100 people who thought they were lucky and 100 people who thought they were unlucky. And after finding them, he went out and, you know, however you find those people, he did a study for a year. And what he determined, the common thread was, the lucky people were extroverts and the unlucky people were introverts. That if you talk in the bank line, the grocery store line, the gas station line, if you're verbal and social, you'll get breaks. Oh, my cousin knows somebody that does that. Let me take your number. That social, verbal extroverts, they party more, they socialize more, they connect more, they're human LinkedIns. It's not luck. They manufacture through social connections breaks. Introverted people can often be very successful, but it's always harder. They don't get those breaks, those communication incentivized moments. They don't happen. So you can be successful. It's harder. The Clippers are nonverbal because their star is nonverbal. That is why the Clippers, everything is always hard. You look at them and think, this is the second year in a row. Why are they so bad in clutch situations? They're best. You become your best player. Their best player doesn't talk. He is an introvert. Introverted people don't communicate. So they can succeed, but it's always a struggle. It never looks easy for them. They had to go 7 with the Mavericks. They should have won both the last two games. So this is my theory. When your star is nonverbal, you can win. Nobody's saying you can't. But to the Spurs in Toronto, he entered very communicative systems, the Raptors and the Spurs. When you build it around Kawhi, he's nonverbal. And so, therefore, Doc was very verbal and they didn't connect. So, and Doc was worried about this last year. Doc told me in a podcast, I knew we were in trouble. We weren't good in late in games. We had no chemistry. So if Kawhi is your number one star, you can win, but it'll always be harder. That's my thing.
I got to say, that is brilliant. And I hadn't thought of it that way. And I think there's a lot to unpack here. Number one, I believe in the extrovert theory with all my heart, because I also believe extroverts, not always, but I believe they are generally optimistic, positive people. You have to be in order to put yourself out there, to want to put yourself out there. When I became editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, and we moved from New York to Bristol, 70% of the staff did not come with us. So we had to hire all new people. And we had to do this in the middle of still having to put out the magazine. It's not like we can take 2 months off, right? So we had to change the wheels on the truck as the truck was moving. And part of the reason they moved us to Bristol was to be more connected to the Bristol infrastructure, try to have ideas, try to get people to know us more, et cetera. My mantra for the team, I said this every day, say yes, be nice. That's it. Opportunities are going to come. People don't know us. People think we're this individual entity that's in New York that probably had an attitude. Now we're in Bristol. We're going to say yes. We're going to be nice. We're going to meet people. We're going to make our space here in Bristol and prove how we can be good partners and influence. That's about being extrovert, right? That is about creating positivity, being optimistic, and finding ways in which you can connect with people. 100% absolutely believe in that. The second part is, do you think if you are an extrovert, you automatically have to be optimistic? Because Kobe Bryant, very vocal, very much an extrovert, not positive in the way he conveys his criticism. An incredible teacher, Michael Jordan, different than Kobe because he was just mean. I think Kobe was constructive, but not necessarily the most optimistic, positive when they are conveying their lesson.
Okay, so I'll push back on Kobe. Kobe's a loner. Kobe is viewed as communicative. He was when the light was on. But Phil Jackson is communicative. Shaq is very social. Kobe was the loner. So Kobe was not always the easiest player to play with. Similarly, Michael Jordan got so big, he became a little bit of a loner later in his career. He was great when the cameras were on, but mostly hid his last 8 years in the league. He couldn't go to a restaurant.
Right.
So Kobe and Michael may be viewed as, oh, they're very, very, they're really, by the end, Kobe was always a loner. We think of him because he was so damn smart and good with the media as social. He wasn't. He had very few friends, very tight circle. Derek Fisher was one of his few friends, may have been his only close friend on the Laker team. Similarly, Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan to this day has about three close friends, and they're all down in Charlotte with him.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I'm thinking only about the court, only in the way they communicate leadership. You are a preternaturally positive guy. When you talk about the stuff you are working on, no matter what's happening, you talk about it from a very positive point of view. Jordan and Kobe, when they would give instruction to their teammates and they were incredibly hard on their teammates, incredibly critical and had incredibly high expectations, forget about everything else and how they lived their lives. They were extroverts. They were loud. They were aggressive. They weren't optimistic extroverts. They weren't positive with their reinforcement, but they were extroverts. To me, I think it supports what you're saying about Kawhi. He's not negatively an extrovert in which he is trying to make the team better. He's not communicating anything.
And so you have to guess with introverts. Are they mad at me? Are they in a good mood? Nobody knows where Kawhi is. He had his own trainer. He was showing up late to practice. He bought a damn house, a 2-hour drive from the facility. I just think if he's the face of your franchise, chemistry will always be a problem. You know, it is. I got into this discussion. I'm going to say it's with Mark Cuban on an email, but it's not. It was somebody, a very successful person. And I said, and generally when I'm around really successful people, I talk less and I listen more. But I threw this out there to somebody in the last year. I said, there's no one thing that makes somebody professionally rich. I said, but let me throw an idea at you. It's hard to get super wealthy and be cynical. Because business is so hard, you have to be an optimist. That's why most media people aren't real rich. They're cynics. That to be successful in business, you're constantly overcoming. You're constantly pivoting. You can't go down a dark hole. You have to see the light in every roadblock. Because the whole game of business, as you know with the Action Network, you're just changing every 3 months. So if you you have to talk yourself into stuff, not talk yourself out of stuff. To be truly wealthy over time, you have to be an optimist. You have to believe there's an answer to the latest problem.
Well, look, you're preaching my personal life theory that I talk to my kids about all the time. I also couldn't agree with you more. And what's been fascinating, before I left ESPN for the Action Network, when we launched it, you know, my experience was largely as someone who was writing books, as a member of the media, an executive at ESPN. When I would come in contact with people who were in business, it was, you know, I wasn't emailing with Mark Cuban or like having dinner with Elon Musk. It was like I'd meet someone at a conference and we'd hang out and become friends. But the exposure I had to people in business, from many different formats, whether they were investors or where they were running big media operations or big gambling operations, you expect people in those positions to be potentially challenging personalities. I have yet to meet more than a handful of people who are nothing but optimistic, nothing but positive, nothing but thinking about what are the solutions that we can come to together. And maybe that's the perspective of, okay, we're meeting you. We're trying to have a conversation about a potential partnership. But in social situations, I just find that the more optimistic and positive someone is, also tends to go in line with potentially the amount of power and influence they have in whatever position they're in.
Yeah, lubricate, don't agitate is a message to my kids all the time. Lubricate a room, lubricate a long drive in a car, be positive. Just, you can lubricate society or you can agitate people. And nobody wants to hang around. I have somebody I know in the media, not well, very, very smart. And I thought about, his name came up as somebody we could hire at FS1 in the first year. And I said, he's a bad hang. Nobody wants to hang with him. He's a bad hang. And that's a real thing. By the way, and this is not a shot, do you know how many ESPN people have applied to Fox Sports in the last 5 years? And I mean 50. And a lot of the biggest stars. And one of the reasons is ESPN is no longer a good place to hang out. Fox is a fun place to hang out. That matters a lot. Like people, listen, life's anxiety filled enough. You want to go to work and laugh.
You also want to go to a place where if the worst case scenario, like say a pandemic happens and you need to figure out how to manage your business, how to manage your life and how to communicate with people on your team. So not everybody is nervous for what their future holds. You want to do it with people that you know aren't going to panic. And I tend to think that people who are optimistic will be thoughtful and try to see all the angles. And people who are pessimistic are going to be like, the sky is falling, cut everything. We need to conserve this very second. And I say to my kids, you know, they're teenagers, so they can be assholes all the time.
Right.
And I will say to them, guys, it's 2021. Meanness is out. Kindness is in. And then they will look at me like I'm a loser, and then they'll leave the room.
Yeah, I tell my ex-wife this from time to time. Once you've done well in life, you can't fake your kids out. Like, they know you've done well, right?
Yeah.
And I said, our challenges with our kids are different than our parents' challenges with us. Our challenge, because my theory is once you have crown molding and granite countertops, you're fucked as a parent. The kids have no aspiration. So our challenge is to inspire them and give them opportunities because they are going to grow up more comfortable than we did. My parents' challenge was I didn't get run over by a car bicycling to school because I couldn't afford a car, like keeping me alive. Mine's not keeping my kids alive. It's keeping my kids inspired. And that things don't come easy because the life is easier. We DoorDash a lot. We would go out, and when I was a kid, I swear to God, we'd go out once a month, max, to a restaurant. Now, society's obviously changed. More people eat out. But it's like, that's one of the great joys of my life now is eating out. People say, well, do you have a hobby? And I'm like, cocktails and dinner with my wife is a great part of my life. That right. I could give up almost anything except that.
I was thinking all day today, it's a Friday afternoon. It's one of the few perfectly beautiful days in Connecticut. And I'm like, later today, it's going to be nice out. My kids aren't going to be around. I know they're going to be out with friends. My wife and I, we're going to sit in the backyard, going to have a drink, maybe order in, and it's going to be a lovely evening.
Do you still live where you live?
I live exactly where I live, the middle of West Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah. I actually liked my time there. I got tired at the end. The winters beat me up a little bit, but I will tell you this. I think small towns, you know, 60,000 people, that are close to bigger cities are the best places in America to live. I really do.
I agree. It's getting much more crowded now. The real estate prices in central Connecticut are insane because the pandemic is allowing so many people who are in Boston and New York to work remotely, maybe going 1 or 2 days a week at the most. So they're all moving further out where the real estate is a little bit cheaper. The schools are really good and it's actually jacking prices up, which is why I got people jackhammering in the front of my house because we're doing renovations because maybe we'll sell this place.
Isn't it interesting how every time we go through a full-fledged crisis in America, when we come out of it, regulations have been formed, legislation has been created that were stronger. Like post 9/11, airport security is significantly better. And the crap you used to be able to take on a plane is now embarrassing.
Yeah.
Post-pandemic, it's opened up this world where people get more freedoms. They can work from home. They save on gas. They save on parking. Like, the media, I think, has to do a better job of being less hyperbolic in these national once-a-decade crises. We always come out of it smarter, smarter legislated, smarter regulated. I look at right now the world. I mean, we've got an inflation concern on the market, but from the cryptocurrency to the tech advancements, America has such a strong, durable economy. It's so multifaceted. I'm not saying we won't face recessions, but I could see us living in a world of brief rolling recessions where we don't go as deep because we have so many industries. One of them is bound to be ticking up as we have an economy. It's almost like Vegas.
Yeah.
The casinos are bad. The economy's bad. In California, we haven't had a recession in a long time. Tourism, agriculture, entertainment, space exploration. You know, if it was all theme parks, our economy would be up and down, like in Oklahoma, where it's oil and energy. So Oklahoma's economy is up and down. America's economy now is so vast and multifaceted that, and a lot of this has been expedited, I think, because of the pandemic. We were forced to use tools that Zoom. We were going to use it eventually. When you force fed it to us, we all went, hell, it's a way better life.
Yeah, there's a lot of great books out there about this, about the transition and transformation that happened, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, when people came back from the war, when office work became part of the general culture, when we transitioned from being a manufacturing-based economy to being a banking-based economy, to being an information technology-based economy. And all of that, when you are doing that and you're not solely relying on manufacturing, which is a lot of what happened prior to the Depression, then all of a sudden, the dips and valleys, like obviously we've had them in the 70s, we had them in the 80s, we had them in the 90s, we had them in the 2000s, but it's not in the same level of catastrophe as sort of it might once have been. And we saw it, Zoom, Peloton, gambling stocks, certain finance stocks, forget crypto, forget about like the meme stocks, the AMCs or whatever, the GameStops, stocks with real fundamentals like Zoom that we're talking about.
Yeah. 2008, we had a catastrophe, but it was sparked by criminal activity, which was, I guess that's probably unavoidable. So mm-hmm. we could face something like that. I mean, that's, there's a reason we have regulations. We're right. not good unregulated. We are not as a species. We have to be regulated. All right, Chet.
All right.
Yeah, this is good stuff. All right, buddy.
All right, brother. You too. I'll talk to you later.
See ya. All right, my Action Network bet of the week, Clippers -4.5, Game 3 in Los Angeles. I'll take them to beat the Jazz rather comfortably. Donovan Mitchell can't remain that hot. Thanks for listening to Chad Millman. Follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter, Instagram. Rate, review, subscribe. Doug Gottlieb joins me Sunday talking hoops. See you then.
Volume.